Back during the California Gold Rush, thousands of people packed up everything they owned and headed west, hoping to strike it rich. Some of them found gold, most didn't. But here's the interesting part. Many of the largest fortunes from that entire era weren't even made by the miners. They were made by the people selling the picks, the shovels, the boots, and all the unglamorous equipment that made the gold rush possible in the first place. Now, I think there might be a lesson in that for what's happening right now, because the hot topic these days is AI and how fast this technology seems to be moving. Every week brings another headline, another billion-dollar partnership, another company promising that AI is about to change everything. And all of that may very well be true. But there's another side of this story that gets a lot less attention, because I think the most important AI story isn't actually the software, it's everything required to support that software. Enter section one, the part of the AI story no one's talking about. Every AI model, every data center, every single chatbot response, all of it ultimately runs on the infrastructure that exists in the real world. It runs on electricity. It runs on transmission lines, on transformers, on cooling systems, power generation, and on enormous volumes of raw materials. So what may look like a technology story on the surface looks a lot more like a resource story. In fact, I'd argue one of the biggest misconceptions about AI is that the hard part is building better software. I think the hard part is building the physical capacity to support that software as it scales. So let me explain. Software and infrastructure move on completely different clocks. A new AI model can be trained and deployed in a matter of months. A power plant takes the better part of a decade to permit, build, and bring online. A new app can pick up 100 million users almost overnight. A new copper mine globally takes close to 18 years on average to go from discovery to production. And in the United States specifically, that number stretches closer to 29 years. Meanwhile, ChatGPT only became a mainstream household name a few years ago. Many of the mines that might ultimately supply the copper for the AI build-out would have needed to start their permitting process before most people have ever even typed a prompt. So here's where I'm getting at. Technology may move fast, but the physical world doesn't. And that's going to be a problem. Enter section two, AI's electricity problem. Now, to be clear, a single AI query doesn't even use that much power at all. Google has estimated that a typical Gemini query uses roughly a quarter of a watt hour of electricity, which is about what it takes to run a TV for 9 seconds. That's trivial. OpenAI has cited a similar number for ChatGPT, around a third of a watt hour per query, though that figure is a few years old and newer estimates for its latest model run much higher. But the problem isn't the individual prompt, it's the scale. ChatGPT alone is reportedly fielding something like 2.5 billion prompts a day. Multiply that tiny per query number out, and you land on an estimated 356 gigawatt hours a year, just for that one platform. And that's before you account for every other AI product layered on top of it. And here's the part that should catch your attention. Between 2024 and 2025, Google says it's improved the energy efficiency of its AI systems by roughly 33 times. Through a mix of better hardware and smarter algorithms, that's an enormous gain. And total power consumption is still climbing anyway. This is what economists call the Jevons paradox, which is when something gets more efficient, people don't use less of it. They use it so much more that total consumption only goes up. Google itself has talked about wanting to double its AI compute capacity roughly every 6 months, which compounds into something like a thousandfold increase in just a few years. Data center electricity demand is projected to roughly double from 2022 and 2026. And the International Energy Agency has projected that by 2030, global data center electricity consumption could be on par with the entire annual power demand of a country like Japan. So, however you want to frame it, AI isn't simply creating demand for better software. It's creating demand for an enormous amount of additional electricity. And importantly, this isn't just a future possibility. The largest technology companies in the world are already committing hundreds of billions of dollars toward the infrastructure needed to support it. And once you accept that, the obvious question is, well, where does all of that electricity come from? Enter Section 3. Why nuclear enters the picture? For a long time, nuclear power occupied a strange place in the investing world. It remained an important source of electricity in plenty of countries, but it wasn't treated as a growth story. Investment slowed, several countries moved away from it entirely after Fukushima, and most investors stopped paying attention. But AI is changing that. Because if you're running a massive data center, reliability is not optional. And while nuclear isn't the only answer, natural gas will likely play a major role as well. Particularly in the United States, where gas-fired generation remains abundant and relatively inexpensive. But many technology companies are increasingly looking towards nuclear because it can provide large amounts of reliable, around-the-clock electricity without direct carbon emissions. And that right there is exactly the gap nuclear fills. Unlike solar, it doesn't depend on sunshine. Unlike wind, it doesn't depend on the weather. It produces large, consistent amounts of baseload power around the clock, which happens to be precisely what hyperscale data centers require. And that's why some of the biggest names in tech have quietly become some of the biggest names in energy. Meta, Amazon, Google, and Microsoft have all signed contracts tied to nuclear power over the past year and a half, totaling more than 10 gigawatts of capacity. Microsoft has put money into restarting Three Mile Island, which is a nuclear power plant, and Google has committed to small modular reactors. So with that, you can see a trend, which makes me assume that these companies are trying to lock in electricity the same way they once locked in cloud capacity. And governments are leaning the same direction. In March of this year, a nuclear energy summit in France produced a formal pledge from a long list of countries to triple global nuclear capacity by 2050. The United States has gone further as well, designating uranium as a critical mineral for national security and committing billions of dollars towards rebuilding domestic enrichment capacity. At the same time, policymakers, utilities, and industry groups are increasingly discussing the need for a much larger U.S. nuclear fleet over the coming decades. So you have tech companies that need power every hour of every day, and governments that suddenly have every incentive to make nuclear power bigger, faster, and more strategically important than it's been in decades. So that brings us to the fuel that makes all of this work in the first place. Enter Section 4, uranium, the fuel no one's talking about. Every nuclear reactor needs fuel, and uranium is that fuel. If you're new to resource investing, that might feel like a strange place to land after starting a conversation about chatbots. But once you follow the chain, it does make sense. AI needs data centers. Data centers need reliable electricity. Increasingly, that reliable electricity is expected to come from nuclear, and nuclear power runs on uranium. So for anyone counting on a smooth supply response, sorry to burst your bubble. Global uranium production today is only meeting somewhere around 90% of existing demand before AI adds anything new to the equation. New mines typically take somewhere between 10 to 15 years to move from discovery to production, sometimes longer. You simply cannot decide you need more uranium next year and have it show up. Now layer AI on top of that, if nuclear ends up supplying just a quarter of data center electricity by 2030, one industry estimate puts the additional uranium required at around 4,890 tons a year, which is roughly 8% of current global production. And that's not a rounding error. That's an entire new buyer showing up in the market that was already short before AI even walked through the door. And the geopolitics around uranium are just as messy as the geopolitics around oil. Sanctions on Russia have disrupted parts of the traditional supply chain. Earlier this year, flooding in northern Saskatchewan collapsed the Smoothstone River Bridge that served as the primary supply route into two of the highest-grade uranium operations on the planet. Cameco's MacArthur River Mine and Key Lake Mill, and forced the company to halt milling until the road could be repaired. It's a reminder of just how fragile the physical logistics of this industry can be. A single piece of infrastructure going down can ripple through an entire supply chain. Meanwhile, China has been playing a much longer game, locking in uranium supply through state-backed multi-decade investments across Africa and building out vertical integration from the mine all the way to the reactor. The United States, for its part, still imports more than 95% of uranium it uses, and a meaningful share of global enrichment capacity sits in other countries entirely. Of course, none of this means uranium prices move in a straight line. Like any commodity market, uranium has its ups and downs. New production can temporarily ease supply concerns, while project delays, policy decisions, and shifting market sentiment can create uncertainty along the way. But the broader challenge remains the same. Demand appears to be moving higher, while expanding supply is a process measured in decades, not quarters. And that's why uranium fits into this larger AI story. Throughout this entire video, we've seen the same pattern repeat itself over and over again. The digital economy can scale incredibly quickly. The physical economy generally can't. AI adoption can happen in the matter of months, while building the energy systems needed to support it can take years. And when those two timelines start moving at different speeds, that's when bottlenecks begin to emerge. Enter Section 5, copper, the metal of electrification. Uranium helps answer where the electricity comes from, but copper helps answer how that electricity actually gets anywhere at all. Copper doesn't get the headlines that oil or uranium gets, and most people probably don't think about it at all. But it's one of the most efficient conductors of electricity that exists. And it sits inside essentially every piece of the system we've been talking about. Power generation, transmission lines, substations, transformers, data centers, and communication networks. Dan Yergin, who's about as respected a voice in energy analysis as exists, has called copper the metal of electrification, and that's about as accurate a description as you'll find. Every AI query gets processed somewhere, and that somewhere is a server. Those servers sit inside data centers need electricity, and that electricity needs to be generated, transmitted, and distributed through infrastructure that is soaked in copper from one end to the other. S&P Global put out a report earlier this year, projecting that copper demand tied to AI, defense, and robotics will help push total global copper demand up 50% by 2040, growing from around 28 million metric tons a year today to roughly 42 million metric tons. Without a meaningful increase in mining and recycling, the report estimates more than 10 million metric tons of that demand could simply go unmet every year. That's nearly a quarter of future demand with nowhere to come from. And AI isn't the only thing competing for copper. Defense spending is rising in countries like Germany and Japan, which means more demand for everything from military equipment to electrical systems, all of which require copper. One of the authors of the report, former U.S. Ambassador Carlos Pascual, made an interesting point. Military demand for copper doesn't really respond to higher prices. If governments need it for defense, they're going to buy it regardless. At the same time, the AI boom is triggering a massive wave of data center construction. Last year alone, companies announced more than 100 new AI-related data center projects worth nearly $61 billion. Then you add electric vehicles, you add grid updates, you add renewable energy infrastructure, and pretty quickly, you notice that every major trend shaping the modern economy seems to require more of it. Enter Section 6, why new copper supply is so hard to find. So if demand is climbing this fast, why doesn't the mining industry just produce more copper? One of the best explanations I've heard comes from Richard Adkerson, the longtime CEO of Freeport-McMoRan, one of the world's largest copper producers. He likes to compare copper to oil. With oil, modern seismic technology can often identify reservoirs with a fairly high degree of confidence. Once a target is confirmed, companies can drill and bring new production online relatively quickly. Copper is different. Deposits are spread across enormous areas, discoveries are far less predictable, and proving a deposit requires years of drilling before companies even know exactly what they have. Then comes permitting, financing, engineering, and construction. In many cases, it can take nearly two decades to bring a major copper project from discovery to production. At the same time, much of the world's copper supply comes from just a handful of countries, particularly Chile and Peru. Chile alone accounts for roughly a quarter of global mine supply, and its deposits sit in a region where water scarcity, indigenous land rights disputes, and shifting royalty and tax policy have all slowed permitting in the recent years. That means political decisions, environmental reviews, and local opposition can all affect how quickly new supply reaches the market. In much the same way, Russia's isolation and China's state-backed buying shaped the uranium market. Now, to be clear, this isn't an argument that the world is running out of copper. Atkerson himself said that technology could eventually unlock new sources of supply, just as innovation transformed the oil industry decades ago. The challenge is that right now, demand is growing faster than new projects are being developed, and that's what makes copper so important. The demand side is moving at the speed of AI, while the supply side is moving at the speed of mining. Even if we had all the copper and uranium we needed tomorrow, we'd still face another problem. The equipment required to generate and move electricity is becoming a bottleneck of its own. Large transformers can take years to arrive. Gas turbines are booked years in advance. New transmission lines often spend years moving through permitting before construction can even begin. So these aren't minor delays. They may ultimately determine how quickly AI can grow. Enter Section 7. So where does that leave investors? AI infrastructure is no longer some niche corner of the economy. It's becoming a meaningful economic force in its own right. The data center cluster around Ashburn, Virginia, often referred to as the data center capital of the world, now consumes an astonishing amount of electricity. Some estimates suggest it uses more than a quarter of the power generated by Virginia's largest utility. Alphabet, Amazon, Meta, Microsoft, and Oracle have collectively committed hundreds of billions of dollars toward AI infrastructure. On top of that. But here's what's interesting. The companies building AI systems are expanding much faster than many of the industries supplying them. So whether we're talking about power generation, transmission infrastructure, uranium supply, copper production, or data center construction, the same pattern keeps appearing. Demand is accelerating and supply takes much longer to respond. That's creating bottlenecks throughout the system. And if AI continues expanding the way many people expect it to, then eventually the conversation has to move beyond software and start focusing on supply. Because every piece of infrastructure we've discussed throughout this video has come from somewhere, and none of that supply appears overnight. Every producing mine operating today started as a discovery. Every major deposit had to be identified, drilled, studied, financed, permitted, and developed long before it became an important source of supply. That's one of the reasons we spend so much time paying attention to resource companies at natural resource stocks. Because understanding where future supply comes from is an important part of understanding how the entire system works. So let's bring this all the way back to where we started, the California Gold Rush. It wasn't just about the gold. It was also about the people selling the picks, the shovels, the railroads, and the equipment that made the entire rush possible. And like I said before, I think AI has a similar story. For years, people talked about technology as though it was somehow separate from the physical world. But artificial intelligence is reminding us that it isn't. Which means one of the most important questions of the next decade may not be how powerful AI becomes. It may be whether the physical world can keep up with it. For Natural Resource Stocks, I'm Tiffany Georgopoulos, and I'll see you next time. All right, guys, thank you so much for watching. And if you enjoyed this video, please hit that like button down below. And if you want to learn more about natural resources, junior mining companies, or geopolitics and more, hit that subscribe button. And I promise you, you will stay updated. This is Another Look with Tiffany Georgopoulos, and I'll see you guys next time.